Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Know a lot about golf.
Well, we're waiting.
And hello again. It's time for us, those weekend golf guys. I am John Ashton in the studio. He is Jeff Smith, Golf Magazine top 100 teacher. Jeff Smith, home.
Home again in Indiana, right? So, yeah. Yesterday was a long drive from Colorado. I managed to not hate every second of driving through Kansas. You know, those books on tape and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't do those. But I did listen to a couple of podcasts yesterday. Just so you know, it's not a one-day trip. It's 18 hours. And so I left Monday night. I left Colorado and it was beautiful. The leaves were unbelievable and all the aspens were going crazy. I woke up Monday morning and it was cold and rainy and windy and it just screamed that it's time to go.
So get out of Denver, baby. Get out of Denver, right. Baby. You got it.
That's right. Packed it all up, threw it all in the car. Hasta mañana. Let's go.
left without a care. Man, I got an email the other day. It's a subject that we have covered before, and maybe it bears revisiting because it seems to be something that a lot of people are concerned about. But it was debunking golf myths.
Uh-huh.
And we've done it before, but it bears repeating because so many of us fall into the trap of thinking these things are important or that they're meaningful or that they do anything to improve your game. We'll just visit a few of them that we have before. But again, the first one being throwing grass up to check the wind. That does nothing because unless you're planning on hitting a worm burner, because right. You can't throw that grass more than 8 feet from the surface of the ground.
You know, I don't get the whole throwing the grass thing because literally this ball that we hit, if we hit it well, it's going to be up as high as the top of the trees,
mm-hmm.
pretty much with all the clubs. So that whole toss and grass thing, even if it's windy down here, it's way more windy up there. So even if you don't have any wind at the height you can throw grass, there's still going to be wind up there blowing around your golf ball.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't get that. I mean, why not just look at the tops of the trees? If that's where your ball's going to be, why not just look at the tops of the trees? See, and if you're playing out in Arizona where there aren't any trees and the cactuses don't move, right?
Right.
You know, then, okay, maybe there's some validity in that. You know, I just don't know. I'm not sure.
Because wind at the ground level is blocked by trees. It's blocked by houses. It's blocked by buildings. A lot of times, too, it's swirling and it is actually blowing in a different direction than the air just 20, 30 feet above your head.
Yeah. So I think that's a difficult way of trying to figure it out. Look, if it's overall a pretty windy day, your pants are flapping, right? Of course, you know, even yours, John, the funny pants, those are even flapping a little bit, right? The plaids. You know, so when you see that and you see the flagsticks moving and, you know, you see the trees and the leaves and all that, I'm like, yeah, you know, it's just, it is what it is.
Yeah.
You just look at it and you're like, okay. But the whole, when you can't see it thing, how are you going to identify it? I get it. There is even these little handheld wind metering things. I don't know what the heck they're actually called, but you know, a windometer or whatever that, I don't know. I just made that word up. But you know, it's just one of those things where you look at it and you're like, all right, so let's hope there's not a lot of wind up there overall, if it's a gusty day, you can kind of time the gusts, you know, 4 or 5 seconds apart kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that would be one that you could pay attention to. But I don't know about the whole throwing the grass up thing.
Yeah. How strong does wind have to be to actually affect a golf ball's flight?
You know, I don't really know, but I'm guessing, you know, 5 to 6, 7 miles an hour could affect it. Okay. Some, right? Okay. It's, you know, I guess if you're hitting a wedge and it's moving, you know, it's a floater, it's not piercing, right? And it's into a crosswind, I'm sure that that would get blown around a little bit more than if you hit a piercing shot at the same wind speed, you know?
True. Yeah.
I think ball speed and wind speed, you know, I don't think the wind is really going to affect a fast moving ball nearly as much as the slow moving ball.
Speaking of wedges, something else that a lot of us get wrong, another myth that can be dispelled, is we watch the guys on TV with their wedge shots, and they take these long swaths of ground after
the pelt.
And many of us think that that's the secret to getting all of that spin. And we try to hit down on it.
All right.
Hit down on it.
About the hitting down on it bit. All right. So let's cut to the chase.
Yeah.
The club's in the air and the ball's on the ground. So even if I took a low backswing and the club's back off the ground any, and it gets to the bottom of the ball, I'm hitting down on it. Right. The angle of the club head is moving down to the bottom of the golf ball. So let's just not overgeneralize that thing, because down can be anywhere from a half a degree down to 90 degrees down. Can it?
Yeah.
So let's not go there. Let's just say, hey, guess what? We're going to be getting to the club to the bottom of the ball. That would be a better way of saying something.
So is there no swing secret to putting a spin on the ball? Is it?
Oh, yes, there
other
is.
Than getting your grooves right.
Well, there's the loft of the club at impact. And then there's the angle that the club is moving downward at the same time. There's the difference between the two. So let's just picture in our head that we've got the loft of the club is 5 degrees. I know, folks, that's not all right. Let's talk about it. 10 degrees, because that's a driver. Okay? Okay. All right. The 10 degrees of loft at the time I hit the ball. And let's say that I was moving it 5 degrees downward. There's a thing there, 15 degrees, right?
Yeah, that's what the math would
things
say.
Things facing yeah. up 10 degrees and moving down 5 degrees. So that's about a 15-degree thing there. But the difference between the two is what we're talking about. And that's what creates spin. Now, a lot of times we talk about spin is being created by the difference between the angle of the face, in this case 10 degrees up, and the traveling direction of the club, in this case, 5 degrees down. So the difference there, right, is we've got 5 degrees of difference in the facing up and traveling down bit. And that's what creates spin, is the difference between the angle of the face and where it's pointed at the time and where the club is traveling. And that's what creates spin. But most of the time we have this conversation, it's about the side-to-side spin, the left and rightness of it. Like the face angle is pointed 10 degrees to the right and moving 5 degrees to the left.
Right.
And you look at that and go, oh my God, I can understand why that ball's spinning.
Yeah.
But if you just flip that and went to the vertical version of that, that's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah. But let's move up the bag, though. Let's move to wedges, because how many of us would love to be able to hit one of those shots like we see on TV where it hits the green and backs up?
Yeah.
I mean, that's some serious spin. And what's the secret to doing that, if there is a secret, other than just hitting
it? Well, that's what we're talking about, right? You have a wedge in your hand. And let's say that you're delivering your 55-degree wedge to the ball. but you're moving it 5 degrees downward. Okay. That's more spin than if you have your 55 degrees and you're moving it level to the ground.
Okay.
So this whole thing about, remember we used to, back in the day, we used to think of it as pinching the ball.
Yeah.
Right? Well, we actually thought the ground was so hard and the face was so hard that the ball actually compressed against the ground and the club face and squirted out of there like you're popping a zit on your face or something. You know, hard surface on one side, hard surface on the other, and they're colliding together and squashing the golf ball and squirting it out. Yeah. That's what we had in our head.
Yeah.
And in fact, the ball is off the face so fast that that's not even close to being possible. Not to mention the ground is not as hard as a golf ball. Anyway, but anyway, some of the things is this. It's the angle of the club traveling versus the angle of the club facing. As soon as it strikes the ball, the club itself compresses the cover on the ball. You know, those soft balls that have spin a lot, you know, the Pro Vs and such. That they spin a lot because the cover is soft enough that that's the part of the golf ball that gets compressed at that one little millisecond. And then you got these grooves on the face and in the face, and that grabs that cover, and the ball starts to rotate and spin.
There you go.
So that's what we've got in the elements of spin, is that friction from face to cover of the golf ball.
Cool.
Which is why those people out there who play these rock hard golf balls, they can't spin it around the greens, and they have, man, how do I hit that shot? I'm like, well, the first thing you got to do is not play that ball.
Get a better ball, buddy. And how many times have you heard someone say, hey, tee it high, let it fly?
We're going
to check and see if that is indeed the way to go when we come right back. Hang out. We are Those Weekend Golf Guys. If you're used to doing some business on the golf course, we have another group for you on Facebook. It's called the Back Nine Advisory Board. It's a bunch of people who just share ideas on how to do business better while playing golf. The Back Nine Advisory Board. I'm going to confess to you right now, when we started this business, I had no idea what I was doing other than the fact that I was good on the radio and I knew how to play golf and I had this great co-host. And then it came down to the nitty gritty when I had to like keep records, accounting, all the things that you have to do when you run a business. And it was like, what am I doing? So I did a little research and I found that there was this one program that took care of everything I needed and was easy to learn. And it helped me out. It's called NetSuite. And we've been using it for about 5 years now. We were doing everything manually, and it took forever. It took forever. And once we got a little bit bigger than just me and Jeff, well, we started to see the cracks emerging. And things that we used to be able to do in a day took a week, maybe, you know, a couple weeks. Everything was manual, and we didn't have just one source to open up and see where we were. If this sounds like you and your business, you should know three numbers. 36,000, 25, and 1. What are they? Okay, well, 36,000, that's the number of businesses which have upgraded to NetSuite by Oracle. 25, well, that NetSuite turns 25 this year. That's 25 years of helping businesses do more with less. Close the books in days, not weeks, and drive down their costs. And 1, because your business is one of a kind. So you get a customized solution for all of your KPIs. That's key performance indicators. I learned that. In one efficient system with one source of truth. Manage risk, get reliable forecasts, and improve your margins. That's the best part. Everything you need, all in one place. And right now, you can download NetSuite's popular KPI checklist. It's designed to give you consistently excellent performance, absolutely free, at netsuite.com/golfguys. That's netsuite.com/golfguys to get your own KPI checklist for free. netsuite.com/golfguys.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We're back to Those Weekend Golf Guys. I'm John Ashton. He is Jeff Smith. You did a video that's going to be on golf.com soon about tee height and stuff like that, didn't you?
That's right. I did. So I made a little video that involves the height of the tee and the angle of attack, which in the last segment we talked about spin. This can help negate that spin because now I'm going to move the club upward into the ball. So that's going to be reducing that friction. So I've got degrees of loft on the driver, and there's a point where if I wanted to hit it lower, I would move the ball to the lowest part of the arc of the swing as it comes through. So that way the club is coming through the most level. Mm-hmm. And then I only have the loft of the club to deal with. So let's say I've got a 9-degree driver and I hit it at the club striking the ball at level swing. Now all of a sudden I've only got 9 degrees of launch angle and it doesn't spin a whole lot.
Right.
Then if I wanted to tee it high and move it forward, I would be then hitting it on the upswing. So I'd be delivering loft to the club while the club's moving upward instead of downward or level. And then I'm reducing spin even more. So now the angle of attack of the club coming into the golf ball is now moving up instead of down or level. I don't spin the ball very much and I can tee that high and I can launch it high and it comes off with less spin. And you know what happens then?
No, what happens?
It flies then? A lot further.
It flies a lot further. Okay.
Flies a lot further. And then it rolls a lot more.
Okay.
So when do I want that to happen? Oh, well, most of the time.
Yeah.
Right. And when do I want that to really happen? When I'm teeing it up on a, where the tee box is higher than the fairway, you know, let's say mountain golf, right? Mm-hmm. Right. And when the wind is at my back.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed.
Not the wind at level when you throw the grass up in the air, but the wind where the ball's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Way up high.
You know what? So there's interesting, you know, we talk to like tour players, they talk about their shots and the good players talk about their shots and they've got a stock shot, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the big high bomb for the most part, right? Yep. But then they alter the shot because they know something else needs to happen. Like they need to get it on the ground to get it out of the wind, you know, so they want it to, they want a little lower trajectory and they can't just go, you know, getting out their wrench and cranking their head down a couple degrees like a lot of the amateurs try to do. They're not going to do that. So they tee it down a little bit, swing a bit more level, and the ball launches a little lower. And next thing you know, they have this lower penetrating drive as opposed to a higher penetrating drive. And lo and behold, everybody's happy.
That would be something to be able to do is if the wind were blowing at you, would it not?
Or across you.
Okay.
And you didn't want the ball to get affected very much.
Okay.
Right. It's a shot for the situation.
Gotcha.
And we're trying to play the shot that this situation calls for to get the best outcome.
Right.
And people go, wait a minute, but if the lower one doesn't go as far as the higher one, why would I ever want that? Like, well, because the wind messes with your ball when it's way up high in the air.
Yeah.
So if we don't have a lot of wind or we have it at our back, we're okay with launching it pretty darn high, right? Mm-hmm. Which is quite a bit of the time. Right.
Yeah, but I mean, ride the wind, buddy. That's what it's there
but
for.
But when the wind is going to be there in affecting your golf ball in a negative way, we're trying to avoid that problem. We're trying to keep the ball that penetrates the wind. And do we give up distance on that? Not necessarily so. Depends on what the conditions are upon landing, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Still got to carry the bunker, still got to carry the water hazard because they don't roll out of those, right?
Right.
But it's possible that we think of it in terms of we're avoiding the potential for trouble in one way or another. It's kind of part of playing the game. But those people who think, well, I would never hit that shot, will probably lose on a windy day.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be a windy day in order for the wind to affect your shot.
That's the thing, is that you got to be a good judge of how to play the game and figure out, what is this wind? Is it hurting? Is it not hurting? Is it helping?
Yeah.
Or is it not a factor?
Is it benign?
Yeah, right. If the wind is not going to be affecting my golf ball very much, then I'm just going to go ahead and play that normal big high bomb.
Right.
Right. But if the wind is going to be a factor in my golf ball flight, I have to now reconsider. So there's different ways of playing it. So it's, you know, you've got to think a little bit and choose the club you want to hit. So
in most amateurs pre-golf routine, I would say, I'm not going to make up a percentage because those don't mean anything, but the majority of us in a pre-shot routine do not include looking at where the wind is. We may include throwing the grass up, which does nothing. We have already established that. But just checking the surroundings. I mean, look at the birds who are not flapping their wings. What direction are they flying in? Because they're riding the wind when they do that. They're gliding in the direction the wind is blowing. Look at the trees around you. You know, and if you're not playing a links course, there are going to be plenty of trees to check.
If you are playing a links course, they probably have that long grass, that fescue that's sticking up. You can watch that flop around.
Watch that flop around. And another thing is, look at the flag. Most clubhouses have a flag, a very large American flag flying.
Yeah.
Look at where that flag is going, because that's totally indicative of where the wind is.
Yeah.
I mean, there are many, many ways to tell. I mean, you ask anybody who sails on a regular basis, the wind direction at ground level is nothing indicative of what the wind direction above you is. A lot of times you get swirling winds and stuff like that. So you got to work that into your pre-shot routine, where you actually check at altitude where the wind is blowing. And there are many ways to do that. But the other thing is, so what you're saying then is, wind not being a component of this, although it would be taken into consideration, teeing it high is a way to get the ball further down the fairway because you have less spin and more roll.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of people who say to me, I don't want my ball going that high. Okay. Maybe because how their ball got that high was because it was started a little low and then climbed sharply high because the ball was spinning an awful lot, which means it drops down straighter to the ground as opposed to on a shallow angle. Mm-hmm. And the one that drops straight down doesn't go anywhere.
Right.
It doesn't bound forward. But when I get people to launch it high without a lot of spin, all of a sudden it comes down at a shallower to the ground angle and bounces forward and gets a ton of roll. And what they see is a huge difference between the one that they didn't like that launched low and climbed high and fell down straight, and then the one that launched high and had a long peak at the top where it was just keeps traveling forward up high. That's the one that they can, you know, you could basically build a Walmart between those two golf balls.
A super Walmart.
Yeah.
and that's the thing, because we watch on TV and everybody says, you know, we watch, pick a name of any PGA Tour pro, and we watch their drives, which are, you know, in the air 280. I wonder how the hell they do that. But then when they hit the ground, they keep rolling. And it's not because they're playing downhill holes. They just keep rolling out. And it's because of the way they hit the monster drives. They're big shots with teed up a little bit higher, a little bit more forward than most of us put it in this our stance. And they get that rollout. They get that distance, extra distance, instead of coming down and plugging it, which a lot of us do when we hit a high drive.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I don't like those that fall down and plug. Nobody is happy about those.
Especially when you go to where you think the ball landed and you can't find it. It's yeah. Losing a ball in the middle of the fairway is probably the single most frustrating part of this game. But let me ask you a question. How many times have you been told, keep your head down? We're going to address that and the pros and cons of worrying about that when we come right back, because we're going to do that and we're dispelling some golf myths right here for those weekend golf guys. Hang on. Well, of course, we have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/golfguys. Go there and follow us. Like us, please.
Are you listening to the Approach Shot podcast? If not, here's what you've been missing.
Our guest today, Dan Marino's favorite receiver, O.J. McDuffie with us. And by the way, that's on the internet. And if it's on the internet, it's obviously true.
I put that on the internet. That's why, bro. You know what I mean?
Marino's in there scratching it.
Right.
As was Clayton and Duper.
Download an episode or two of the Approach Shot today at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download podcasts. And find us on the web at approachshot.net.
If you're one of those companies that stayed open during COVID, I have some great news for you. Government funds are available to reward companies who stayed open during that challenging time. It's not a loan. You don't have to pay it back. Your hard work to stay open could qualify you for up to $26,000 per employee at refundsasap.com. That's refundsasap.com. You heard that right. Up to $26,000 per employee. This program is complicated, but nobody knows more about it than the tax experts at refundsasap.com. You pay nothing up front. They do all the work. Then they share a percentage of the cash they get you. Businesses of all types, including nonprofits and churches, can qualify, including those who took PPP loans. If you have 5 or more employees, let refundsasap.com help you get up to $26,000 per employee. Visit refundsasap.com. That's refundsasap.com, refundsasap.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It is us again. We're here. Folks, we kick golf, guys. I'm John Ashton. He, of course, Jeff Smith. Golf Magazine Top 100 teacher, Jeff Smith. Like we asked at the break, how many times have you been told, keep your head down? Or even keep your head still? A lot of times, you know, somebody hits a bad drive or a bad shot, and they top the ball and they hit a worm burner or they chunk it or whatever, and they go, I lifted up. I looked up. You look up to watch a bad golf shot and you will see one.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, there's all kinds of versions of that. All you're ever going to see when you look up is a bad shot or something like that, you know,
right.
Whatever. That whole family of stupid stuff that's all related to the moronic stuff about stay down, keep your head down. I'm like, oh, come on.
I mean, it's a question of posture, right?
It's a question of intent.
Okay.
What we see is people rising up out of their postures, but yet we watch tour players do that same thing. It's a matter of when. Here we are talking about a downswing that for the average Joe takes a third of a second. And then they're going to be standing up at the end. And you're like, wait a second. How are we supposed to try to not raise up while raising up? Oh, no, it's got to start at a certain point. Like they're under control of that. But there are ways to control it.
Okay.
If, in fact, that's actually the problem. But we all know with the average Joe, they don't know what the problem really is, so they're assuming that it's that because they've just heard and have it burned into their skull that coming up out of your posture, so to speak, is the scourge of the earth. And it may be for one player or another, but that doesn't mean that it is for everybody and that it's this epidemic out there. They like to call it early extension now. Oh. We used to just commonly call it as coming out of your posture. Mm-hmm. I didn't stay down on it, right? Now they call it early extension. And I hear other teachers talking about this, and I say, okay, well, what's on time extension? What's late extension? Mm-hmm. If early is terrible, define early for every player. Because we see it coming up on the PGA Tour. If you kept Lexi Thompson or Justin Thomas, if you stopped them from doing it, would they still be notable golfers? Because that's part of how they do it. So you look at it and you're like, okay, so should this be something that we all pay attention to, or should this be something that we only pay attention to if in fact it's actually a problem? Right. But as the average Joe goes, he didn't even know. You know, he didn't even know.
Right, right.
So I don't know. I just I deal with it on a case by case basis.
Okay.
Sometimes I deal with it, like when I give a little talk to a group of students, and I talk to them all about this topic that they hear about. You know, like at the club level, do you do an interview and you say, "Okay, early extension, let's talk about it. Is it bad?" Like, wait a second. There are people out there that succeed with extending that way. And there are people out there that fail with extending that way. So let's not talk about it like it's going to negatively affect everybody. So I have these conversations with club members and do this little talk to the pro thing so that they understand, let's customize your golf swing, and let's customize your thoughts about your golf swing. So that way nobody just says, "Oh, you hit a bad shot. You must have looked up. You need to stay down more," right? Let's not go through that.
Yeah, because I mean, we have mentioned multiple times on the show, and you have seen it multiple times, whether you notice it or not, but the head moves. Your head moves. Try actually swinging a golf club, keeping your head totally immobile, and you will have the funkiest swing you've ever swung. Because your body just doesn't move that way.
Yes.
Is it a problem with people setting up, maybe bending over too much, and then when they swing, their body goes back to where it should be, and they have lifted the body up a little bit?
You know, it's possible, but there's people who have bent over the appropriate amount. Mm-hmm. And they still move up because it's their source of power.
Okay.
So let's not think that we move up because we were too low. Okay. Because if we think that way, then we'll just stand straight up.
Yeah.
And then there's no loading. There's no coiling up of the body. There's no explosive possibilities. They're gone.
Okay.
Let's look at it this way. If we're riding a bicycle and the knee that's up on one side of the bicycle is never up, it's always down, how could I push it down anymore? How could I generate any of that force that propels me? I can't. It has to be up. It has to be bent. It has to be coiled up and loaded to explode, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Otherwise, it cannot extend downward.
Yeah.
So we can't get caught in the thought of, well, I won't early extend if I just stand taller, because the only reason I'm early extending coming out of my posture is because I bent over too much. Hold on a second there, big boy. Is Justin Thomas bent over too much at address? Is that why he rises up? How about Lexi Thompson? Is she? Who's to tell those people that they use that as their source of power? How about the people who get to the top of their backswing and then they lower themselves beyond where they were, and then they explode up and through? Are we going to tell those people that they're too low and that's why they did it? No, we're not, because we wouldn't want to steal their source of power, now would we? So
maybe just borrow.
Let's not go there either, folks. Let's not go there either. Let's not call it a problem when it might not be a problem. Because as soon as we decide that it's a problem, then we start to look for the solution. But sometimes the solution to an imaginary problem is a problem in and of itself.
Yeah, it creates more problems. So what is it that we're doing when we think we hit a bad shot because we think we've picked up, looked up,
well,
moved up?
It's very possible. I mean, just the bad shot thing, right? Let's just say the club head didn't get to the bottom of the ball.
Right.
Right. And you hit it thin, toppy, so to speak. Mm-hmm. People say it's because I came up. It's also partly because maybe their arms didn't send the club head all the way down. I have a wonderful little video that I show for people that I record it and then I put it up to in their golf lesson thing when they're assuming that they came up in their golf swing, but the club because the club head never got to the bottom of the ball. Well, I'll stay in my posture and swing the club head down, but I'll pull my arms up a little bit, you know, alligator arms it a little bit where they're a little closer and tighter to the body. The elbows bend a little and the club head never gets to the ground, but my posture never changed.
Okay.
And then I go do the other one where I stand straight up in my posture and I actually throw the club head all the way to the ground and it still hits the ground. And I just look at them and go, okay, so did I rise up during that golf swing? And they go, oh yeah, you rised up a lot. I said, didn't you hear the club hit the ground? Oh, yeah. Like, guess what? The arms are a bigger factor here in that thing that you hit it thin or toppy than the posture can be.
Okay.
And I record that whole thing for them and I put it up on their end of the lesson thing so that it burns it into their brain that it is possible to not hit the ground because of a different reason than coming up out of your posture. And it's also possible to hit the ground while coming up out of your posture. So let's not make as big a deal of that as we can.
So then the problem may be in the arms. Down. Little T-Rex arm action.
That's right. And that's what I tell people. Like, look, you're like a dachshund or a T-Rex. Little teeny leg. They're all tight to the body. They're all close to the chest, right? But, you know, it's everybody has their own issues. And they all try to look for these broad things like, oh, I just got to keep my head down. I got to stay down on it. That's why it happened. They're in this reach back between the cheeks and pull out the answer thing so fast, right? They're always pulling out the same answer.
Yeah.
You know,
the
guess what?
Way.
I think that space back there, they're pulling out of there. Doesn't have anything good in there. That's what I think is going on. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the misdiagnosis problem that's going on out there is huge. It happens so fast. And it tells me when I see players doing that in golf lessons, that they hit a shot and they instantly tell me what they sure they did. It tells me what their concept is.
Yeah.
And so the first thing I talk to them about is their concept. Because if they continue to do that terrible thing to themselves, then they're in for a lifetime of misery in golf because they're always guessing poorly.
Yeah. And when you guess, like Jeff said earlier, if you guess wrong or you assign the wrong problem, then the solution is also going to be wrong. And you're just going to make yourself worse off than you started with. So, hey, take a lesson, figure out what you're doing. We'll be right back. We are Those Weekend Golf Guys.
If you're fed up with your credit card's high interest rates and your balances are so out of control that they never seem to go down, one call to Consolidated Credit can get the relief you need. Consolidated Credit has helped over 6 million people with credit card debt, and their certified credit counselors are ready to help you. They can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast without destroying your credit. The program works, and the consultation is free. Call Consolidated Credit now. Call 800-214-3104. 800-214-3104. That's 800-214-3104. Consolidated Credit Solutions, Inc. 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services and by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM 1492. Oregon DM 80092. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation. Commission License Number DC 83. Service may adversely affect the individual's credit. Non-payment of debt may lead to additional finance charges or collections activity, including legal action, not a loan company.
And we are here, those Weekend Golf Guys. I'm John Ashton. He is Jeff Smith. JeffSmithGolfInstruction.com. You want to get one of those videos that he talked about. He'll send you one, let you know if you're coming up out of it or not.
Or not, or if it matters.
Yeah, if you got the little T-Rex arms things going on. Do you have any routines that can help someone practice not changing their arm angle, if that's the correct way of putting it, or not, sure, not bending their elbows, or what can you do to make sure that's not what you're doing?
Oh, it's the simplest thing ever.
Okay.
Take away the ball.
Okay.
Make practice swings that skim and scuff the ground and finish in balance facing their target.
Okay.
If you remove the golf ball, you remove intent. And then you'll find out, does this motion in my physical structure work? Will it get the club to the ground? Can I skim and scuff the ground from the posture that I'm standing and the athletic motion that I'm using? And if that's the case, now can we do it faster? Then we can check on the angles in which it comes in. But if I can stand there and make golf swings and they're skimming and scuffing the ground, and then I can step up the speed of that and they still skim and scuff the ground, I'm in pretty good shape, mm-hmm, as far as a movement. If, yeah, I need it to come in from a different angle, okay, we'll deal with that. We'll change something that changes the angles. But if I can't touch the ground in a practice swing with no ball, the first thing I'm going to have people do is touch the ground in a practice swing with no ball.
Right.
Because if they're not succeeding there when there's no intent to hit a ball at a target, they're sure as heck not going to succeed when there is a ball there and then there's intent and a target. So I want them to feel their most natural athletic swing while it skims and scuffs the ground. And if they're not doing that, now we got to wonder why. Are they afraid of the ground? Is that a concept issue? Oh, God, I want to be the superintendent's best friend. I don't know who he is, but I want to be his best friend. You know, right? Here's a thought. If it's skimming and scuffing, you're his best friend. If it's trenching and throwing out beaver pelts, you're not.
No.
Grass will grow back. Unless, of course, you unearth it. If you're the excavator, nobody likes you, right?
You pull it out
if
by
that's
the
your
roots.
Whole goal is to be liked by other people that you'll never know on the golf course. Well, I don't want to create these ankle breaker divots. Nobody does.
Yeah.
We're just not after piercing the ground that much. We're after thumping the ground. Mm-hmm. We're after skimming and scuffing hard, and we're scalping the tops of the grass off. Okay, that'll still grow back. Don't worry, we have grass seed, water, and fertilizer at golf courses, folks. We'll grow more.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Do what you will. We'll make more. No problem.
But, you know, I've heard people tell me in golf lessons that they're afraid of hitting the ground because they're afraid of the vibration, mm-hmm, the shock of it. Okay. So what I do is I grab their club and I tomahawk chop the ground straight down into the ground with full force. And I'll say, guess what? My club is just now skimming on the ground. That blow that I just gave the ground did not send vibrations up to me. That's the most direct blow to the ground you can get. Mm-hmm. But these ones that come through on this shallow skimming angle are certainly not going to provide that kind of shock. And they look at me and like, that makes a lot of sense. So I get them to do it. The tomahawk chops straight into the ground. And I ask them, what did you feel? And the answer invariably is, well, nothing. Like, right, good. Then this other one won't either.
Yes. And they look don't at me worry like, about it. Gotcha. Hey,
yes. Yes.
What is the difference? Because again, you watch amateurs play, you watch, you know, recreational golfers play, you watch the pros play. Some guys take a divot on every swing, others don't.
Yeah. Look, you can just scuff and skim the ground and still hit a flush golf shot.
Yes, you can. I do it all the time. I don't take divots.
A lot of people don't understand the small difference between actually taking a chunk out of the ground and not is a handful of degrees in depth. Not, mm-hmm, necessarily the angle that it came in. It's how low did it get.
Right.
That's why I just tell people to skim and scuff the ground and practice, so that way they feel what's the right depth to get, where it doesn't pierce the layer of the ground. You know, we're not trying to be so deep that we're taking these ankle breaking beaver pelt throwing divots.
Yeah. And I mean, and you have to make sure that during the swing, that divot comes after contact with the ball.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not during or before.
Yeah, exactly. That's a landing spot problem, folks. Yeah. As in, where did it land? You know, that club's in the air and it's coming into the ground. Where did it actually land? And if it's behind the golf ball, nobody's happy.
No.
No, the golf ball did not go very far at all. Usually it's when it's right in front of a pond.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And then you're dead in the middle of it going, Yes. And honestly, most often that right there is a confidence issue when it happens in locations that the ball could get lost.
Right.
Right. That's usually what that is. And then sometimes it happens a lot when people are at the short game area, when they haven't practiced their short game enough. And then they just stick the club into the ground behind the ball. It goes about 6 inches. And then they're standing there going, I only was trying to hit it 10 yards or 10 feet or whatever. Right. And some part of their body locks up, you know, because their brain wasn't confident enough to hit a bunch of those shots to go, oh, I can see how easy it is just brushing the ground.
Yeah.
Because they don't practice them very much. The confidence level is low. The stress level is high. And they hit the little fatty.
Again, your brain is messing with you.
Yeah. The mind is a terrible thing.
Which is a whole new show we could do, and we will in a couple more weeks. But the fact actually we had Debbie O'Connell, who is a sports psychologist, on about 2-3 weeks ago. You can go back to thoseweekendgolfguys.com and check that one out if you want to, or any of your favorite podcast download sites, because this program is available everywhere. So whatever your favorite podcast place is, you can find it, and you will be rewarded with much better shots in the future by listening to some of the stuff. I mean, we have over 370 episodes in the can, on the shelf, wherever you want to call it.
Isn't it amazing how we can just store those things now?
I know, man. It's great. Yeah. Everything we said for the last 11 years is immortalized.
Yeah, which is sometimes good, sometimes not. You know, depends on how well you were, how good you were doing at the editing of my stuff. But I'm just blurting out.
Yeah, right? Don't quote me on that. You know.
Yeah, we have a pact. Yeah. Please tell me you've upheld your end of the bargain on that, so I don't lose my career.
But again, you can check out some of his stuff at golf.com. You can check out some of his stuff in Golf Magazine. He is one of Golf Magazine's top 100 instructors. You can go to jeffsmithgolfinstruction.com anytime you want to and check it out. Also, you know, we've got a special thing where you can get copies or episodes without any commercial interruption, and maybe even get a link to watch the video, because we record this on Zoom so we can see each other when we do this. So if you want to watch the video and listen to the show without any commercial interruption, you can do that simply by becoming a subscriber to the show. Just go to thoseweekendgolfguys.com. Click on subscribe and you can get it, or we'll give you a link at thoseweekendgolfguys.com where you can go and subscribe to the show and get it commercial free with links to the video, so you can see our glorious faces, which means you're going to have to start getting dressed to do this, Jeff. So,
you know, shirt's not good enough.
As long as you're not walking away. It's like those TV news people who are all shirt and tie and jacket, and then, you know, gym shorts.
Yeah.
Because it gets hot in those studios.
So, yeah. It's hilarious, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But anyhow, that's what you need to do if you want that. And all you need to do if you want to get your name on the show, or have a specific problem that you're having addressed by Jeff, is just ask. Okay. Just send us an email. Send it to john@thoseweekendgolfguys.com or to jeff@thoseweekendgolfguys.com, and we will address the situation, your situation, on the show. And we can, of course, change the name if you want to be embarrassed about admitting that you have that particular problem. But anyhow, just let us know. Check us out, thoseweekendgolfguys.com. Hope that this has been very instructive for you. These are myths that you can just forget about the next time you go out to play some golf.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP lawn and garden and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save.